Will the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum. Clerk, please indicate the presence of Representative Byrne during the roll call.
36 present, 4 absent.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, Representative Nakak is excused from the call of the House today. I'll ask unanimous consent that other absent members be shown as excused on official state business.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Our chaplain today is Pastor Hunt of the Resurrection Lutheran Church. Will the House please rise for a prayer? Representative Swanson.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that today's prayer be spread upon the journal.
Without objection, motion is adopted. Clerk, please certify as to the correctness of the Daily Journal.
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 58th day in House Supplement Number 17.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent this body approve the journal as certified by the Chief Clerk for the 58th day and for House Supplement Number 17.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Brings us down to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction to the chambers? Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I have a guest in Gallery A this morning. Probably one an outstanding worker in has been in the formation of the rural education of tennis areas. Sharon Young, head of the school board at Tok.
Further guests for introduction? If not, are there any messages from the governor?
Dear Mr. Speaker, I've signed the following bill and I'm transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 436, making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Administration for the Kotzebue Senior Citizen Center and providing for an effective date. Chapter 14, SLA 1978. Signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. There are two letters from the governor that have been duplicated and placed on each member's desk with new appointees for confirmation. I have no further messages from the governor, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Urien. House, please stand at ease. Please come back to order. We're down to messages from the Senate. Are there any messages from the Senate?
The Senate has passed the following and it is transmitted herewith for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 399 by the Finance Committee, an act making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Fish and Game, D2 expenses and salmon transportation, and providing for an effective date.
Referred to the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Resources has had Senate Bill 339 amended, relating to the assessment of farm use land by municipalities under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Snyder, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Malone, Bennett, Eliason, Smith, Akers, Miller, and Snyder. Urien has no recommendation. Senate Bill Number 339 amended has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had House Concurrent Resolution 102, requesting a study to determine the feasibility of allowing commercial salmon fishing in Hooper Bay under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Snyder, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Malone, Bennett, Eliason, Smith, Urien, Akers, Miller, and Snyder. House Concurrent Resolution 102 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Resources has had House Joint Resolution 66, requesting the Administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to assist in the development of Alaska bottom fish fisheries under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by Eliason, Smith, Malone, Snyder, Urien, Akers, Miller, and Osterbach. Mr. Bennett has no recommendation. House Joint Resolution 66 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 133, Selection of State Land by Municipalities, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute for House Bill 133, Finance, and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Rode, Guy, Swanson, Schaefer, Buchholz, Meekins, and Duncan. Signing no recommendation, Freeman, Haugen, and Cooper. House Bill 133 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 511, creating the Alaska Horse Racing Commission and authorizing paramutual wagering at sanctioned events under consideration. Three of the members of the committee recommend it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurred in by Bradley, Nackack, and Miles. Signing do not pass, Kelly. House Bill 511 has no further referral. The Special Committee on the Alaska Permanent Fund has had House Bill 595, relating to the income of the Alaska Permanent Fund, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by the chairman, Mr. Greening, and signing do pass, Greening, Gardner, Haugen, Schaefer, Meekins, Miles, and Hayes. House Bill 595 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 728, a special appropriation to the Department of Health and Social Services for acquisition of a mobile dental clinic to serve residents of rural Alaska, under consideration. Four members of the committee recommend it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osi, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Byrne, Cotton, Phillips, and Osi. Having no recommendation, Chatterton. House Bill 728 has a further referral to finance. The Committee on Commerce has had Senate Bill 517 amended, relating to the Alaska Pipeline Commission, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by McKinnon, Parr, Carpenter, Hayes, and Brown. Having no recommendation, Chatterton and Bradley. Senate Bill 517 amended has no further referral. The Committee on Commerce has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 166 amended, under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with House committee substitute for Senate Bill 166, and that it do be reported back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman. Having no recommendation, Carpenter, Bradley, McKinnon, and Brown. Signing do pass, Chatterton, Parr, and Hayes. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 166 amended has a further referral to Judiciary. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation in memoriam, Robert E. Sharp, by Representative Hayes. Citation congratulating the Juno Douglas Crimson Bears by Representatives Duncan and Miller. I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 550 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor with a transmittal letter. An act relating to unemployment insurance and providing for an effective date.
Referred to Labor and Management and Commerce.
House Bill 876 by the Commerce Committee.
Excuse me. I think I announced on the last bill Labor and Management and Commerce. Should read Labor and Management and Finance, which were the referrals on the original bill.
House Bill 876 by the Commerce Committee. An act relating to minimal electrical standards.
Referred to the Commerce Committee.
House Bill 877 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor with a transmittal letter. An act making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Labor, Industrial Safety, State Inspection, and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Management, Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Urien.
May we brief at ease?
House, please stand at ease. Come back to order. We're down to consideration of the daily calendar. Clerk, please read the first item on the calendar.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 103 by Dankworth and Meekins, relating to the inclusion of correctional industry in any study of corrections. The Committee on HES has had House Concurrent Resolution 103 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 103 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Byrne, Chatterton, Nackack, Parr, Bennett, Phillips, and Cotton. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute in lieu of the original resolution.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Mr. Clerk, have amendments to the committee substitute?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Question. Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution Number 103 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Thirty-seven yeas, no nays, three excused.
So House Concurrent Resolution Number 103 has passed the House. Brings us to the end of today's calendar and down to unfinished business. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent we revert to reports of standing committees.
Hearing no objection, we'll revert to reports of standing committees. Is the clerk of any reports of standing committees?
The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 588, making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for repurchase of certain oil and gas leases in Kachemak Bay, pursuant to Chapter 113 SLA 1976, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, signing do pass, Greening, Duncan, Buchholz, Meekins, Guy, and Cooper. Having no recommendation, Swanson and Schaefer and Haugen. Signing do not pass, Rode and Freeman. House Bill 588 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 780, making a special appropriation to the National Council on Alcoholism, Alaska Region, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, concurred in by Greening, Duncan, Buchholz, Meekins, Schaefer, Guy, Haugen, Rode, Freeman, and Cooper. Having no recommendation, Swanson. House Bill 780 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative
may we
Swanson.
We be at ease just momentarily.
No objection. We'll stand at ease. Please come back to order.
And Mr. Speaker.
Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I changed my vote on House Bill 588 from a no recommendation to a do not pass.
Changing your committee recommendation. Clerk, please note that. Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, may we return to introduction of guests, please?
Technically, right now, we're under reports of standing committees. Without objection, revert to introduction of guests.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, again, we have some youngsters from Floyd Dryden, the ninth grade civics class, and I'd like to introduce them at this time. In Gallery A is Chuck Thompson, John Wackard, Wayne Carnes, Mark Taylor, Mark Dale, Scott Davies, Rick Spaziani, Stacy Waxbuck, Debbie Haynes, Sean Smith, and Laura Reed.
Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also have a constituent from Kodiak in Gallery A. She's the executive assistant to the Kodiak area native nonprofit arm of the corporation, Ms. Laura Bolton.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, it gives me pleasure to introduce a friend of mine from Anchorage and who has been in public service in the state for a number of years and worked with the Anchorage, Greater Anchorage Borough, and now is the chairman of the Alaska Pipeline Commission, Mr. Harry Donahue, Gallery B.
further guest introduction or committee reports, revert to our regular order of business. We're under unfinished business. Is there unfinished business come before the House? Representative Urien?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to take up my reconsideration on committee substitute for House Bill 489 at this time.
Places a bill before us in third reading. Would the clerk please read House Bill 489 in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 489 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. An act relating to labor relations between school boards and other public employers and their employees.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that we move back to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment.
Clerk, please read the specific amendment.
It's amendment number 2 by Mr. Anderson, page 1, lines 18 through 22. It has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
There is objection. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you recall, I had some very serious problems with the bill yesterday, although I did vote for it, and I did appreciate the opportunity to have more time to look at the bill. I think the amendment as it's written now will take some of the negative aspects out of the out of Section B that's presently before us, and I would hope that the body will go back. But in argument for the amendment, in two separate actions last year, teachers' associations sued school districts and boroughs to compel collective bargaining in good faith. In a third action, school boards sought judgment that certain issues were not bargainable. In the Supreme Court decision of December 9, 1977, the court decided that terms and conditions of employment as a bargaining point between teachers and school boards was too vague without further definition. I believe that the term working conditions used in this bill fits within the blanket terms and conditions used in the Supreme Court decision. The Supreme Court also stated that if teachers' unions are permitted to bargain on matters of educational policy, it is conceivable that through successive contracts, the autonomy of the school boards could be severely eroded, and the effective control of educational policy shifted from the school boards to the teachers' unions. The Supreme Court also said that questions concerning public school teacher salaries, number of hours to be worked, and amount of leave time are also closely connected with economic well-being of individual teachers, that they are negotiable and subject to collective bargaining, and later said that matters which affect educational policy are therefore not negotiable. This proposed amendment is an attempt to clearly state those matters which are negotiable and those matters which are not negotiable. I believe that using the definition of the term working conditions, which is presently in the bill, is vague and dangerous, and that unless it is amended, it provides a statutory authority for the erosion of the autonomy of school boards. That concludes my argument, Mr. Speaker, and I would hope that we could move back to second reading to adopt the amendment that I propose. Thank you.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to oppose the amendment, or returning second reading for this amendment. I think there are two points to be considered here. Mr. Speaker, let's get away from the educational scene for a moment and discuss working conditions in other areas. Now, do they usually apply only to the economic, to use a term here, economic well-being? Mr. Speaker, if the employer has unsafe working conditions, I think that's been negotiated by unions, at least as far as we've had unions. You really can't say the direct economic well-being there. There are a number of issues, Mr. Speaker, which are far broader than economic well-being, which have been negotiated by unions for years. Maybe some members of the body may not agree with this, but this is what's happened. And we're saying that when it comes to these teachers, however, we're going to limit that strictly to economic well-being. I'm not certain that's exactly fair. The second point, Mr. Speaker, is that the history we've had here, at least in the time that I've been in this body, has been of negotiations dragging on, and winding up in April and May, almost at the end of the school year, with no contract. Now, this is not the way it's supposed to work. The bill, as it presently stands, does have a way of resolving a dispute without going to court, to if there is argument as to whether something is or is not negotiable. They should be able to go to the Department of Labor, which is a labor relations agency, get a decision, and go back to the negotiating table. Now, the amendment that's proposed, if we were to go back to second reading and work on that amendment, does not provide for that. We're going to have the same old condition we've always had, big hassles about what is and what is not negotiable.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Working conditions do include health and safety, I believe, and as well as economic well-being. But this definition would leave that out. Now, I think that we have to take a close look at the existing language under Section B now. And I really don't think that putting the matter of defining what working conditions are in the Department of Labor are going to cause the disputes that we're having between the teachers' unions and the school boards. I don't think that's going to shorten the negotiating time. I think it's going to protract it. And I stated yesterday that if Section B, as it's written in the bill, is left in, it is going to tear the guts out of local control and local autonomy. And I don't think we want that. Since last night, there have been telegrams sent down to various legislators down here opposing the bill if this section is left with the present language. I think the language is a compromised language. I'm not going to dispute with the chairman of the HES committee on the points that he's made. I think they're well taken, but I think that the point I'm trying to raise is that the language that I've put together here is more workable, and it goes right to what differences have been as identified by the Supreme Court in negotiations between teachers' unions and school boards.
Representative Rudd.
Well, Mr. Speaker, local control has been mentioned so many times on this floor concerning this issue that I guess I've got to rise to the bait. As far as local control is concerned, what we're talking about here in this issue is a case where two groups of local people, that is the teachers and the school boards, cannot reach an agreement on what constitutes working conditions, for instance. So that we have a very different situation from what we were talking about the other day under local control. When two groups of people who have to work together cannot reach an agreement, you have to have some mechanism for them to be able to go to an impartial body and get a satisfactory adjustment of that agreement. Now, I'm not completely wed to the idea of the Department of Labor. I suppose the State Labor Relations Agency could do it if we would change the statutes to give it that power. There are other agencies that could make some kind of an adjudication between teachers and school districts. But in fact, if we don't provide for such a mechanism for the resolution of disputes between teachers and school districts, we are forcing those issues into the courts, which is very costly and very time-consuming. I don't see any reason why we should not provide some kind of mechanism outside of a local area for the resolution of disputes between these two groups. So I do not favor going back to second reading to adopt this amendment. And in fact, if we want to talk about the definitions of working conditions between the amendment that's being proposed and the bill as it passed yesterday, it seems to me on just looking them over that the definition in the bill that we passed yesterday is far more specific. That's not to say that it's not going to be subject to some dispute between school boards and teachers. But I like the definition in the bill we passed yesterday better. And in addition, I think we have to set up some mechanism for the resolution of disputes between teachers and school boards by an impartial agency. And that's why I oppose going back to second reading for this amendment.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'd like to correct one statement that Representative from Dillingham made. He said that working conditions would include health and safety. As a matter of fact, they would not. This amendment is very specific. It says, for purposes of this section, working condition means those matters that are closely connected with economic well-being.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Miller may be correct, but if he would read the parent A in the bill, it says, and by mutual agreement upon other matters of common concern. And I suppose under that phrase, you could bring in matters relating to safety.
Representative Miller.
You could, Mr. Speaker, but it takes two to tango. When you've got a common concern, mutual agreement, you can't bring it up if one of the two partners is not willing.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And under any question, health is an economic factor. Health and hospital programs are certainly negotiable items. As you can see in paragraph A of this bill, why it does talk about fringe benefits, and that is a negotiable item. What we're groping for is a definition for working conditions, Mr. Speaker, and I assure you this is the definition set forth by the proposed amendment, if we get back to second reading, that has historically been used in the private sector ever since 1938. Mr. Speaker, there was some comment about safety. Mr. Speaker, organized labor has for years, decades, attempted to get safety as an item for negotiation and has been resisted successfully so far by the National Labor Relations Board and also by management to have that included. Now, that does not preclude putting matters of safety in a contract that is negotiated to the satisfaction of both parties. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Lathine.
Mr. Speaker, as I understand it, I think the United States Congress passed an act which is called OSHA, and the state of Alaska is also complying under that act with the Department of Labor. And I believe it applies in this case to public agencies, and I think that's an area that would be taken care of here through the OSHA Act if there's a problem in any one of these areas where people work.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, I'm surprised to hear the member in such glowing praise of the OSHA and DOSH systems. I might remind him of that in some other issue later on. Mr. Speaker, if this amendment is adopted, here's what's going to happen. The school boards will say that the words closely connected with economic well-being mean basically salary or wages, period. Add those to the items that are listed separately in A, and that'll be all. The teachers will say, no, it says those matters closely connected with the economic well-being, and that means something beyond that, perhaps not a great amount, perhaps a little bit. And they're going to fight about it. We're going to be right back where we started from, and they're going to go into the courts out of several districts, and it's going to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is again going to say that it would be really helpful if the legislature would resolve this matter.
Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Again, I'll say, as I said yesterday, that in Section B, all we're doing is just leading ourselves back into the courts, because there isn't any provision in here that leads the Department of Labor to itemize any particular thing in any particular area. Where it might be in downtown Anchorage, something might not be non-mandatory, but it might be mandatory in some other part of Alaska. Then we would have a total conflict, and it's written in here, in provision, to take this thing into court, and where you have two different decisions on a single matter, then you're in court. And this thing of Mr. Representative Brown saying that we will be led into court, we certainly will under this provision, because there's nothing positive at all. There is no absolute direction at all in Section B, and it should be taken out of there.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think I favor this amendment because I don't think it resolves any of the definitional problems with working conditions. However, so that I can be better informed on the vote on this amendment, I'd like someone to answer whether or not what weight a court of law would give the Commissioner of Labor's decision as to which items are mandatory and non-mandatory, because
I don't think this resolves either amendment or the amendment before us or the Section B that's presently in the bill resolves the question of what happens after the aggrieved party appeals the decision of the Commissioner of Labor, which this bill presently doesn't preclude. In other words, we're going to be in court anyway, especially particularly on the item of class size, and I think that's, might as well get it out. That's one of the principal items of dispute. And my question is, since the court again is going to look at this law as it did the law that was just discussed in their Supreme Court decision, what weight they're going to give the Commissioner of Labor. We haven't defined that. I'm just wondering whether, since that decision could go either way, whether the court, if anyway, if that was discussed in committee.
Representative Parr. Mr. Speaker, that particular point was not discussed in committee to my recollection. I would have no problem, Mr. Speaker, if we were to add a sentence to this which would say something to this effect, that the decisions of the Commissioner of the Department of Labor are final, but Mr. Greening would know better as an attorney what would be the right language, but the decisions of the Department of Labor are final, but recourse may be had to the courts. I'd have no problem with that, Mr. Speaker. What I would like to have, though, is a mechanism which I think will resolve at least 90% of these disputes without going to court. And with the proposed amendment, if we go back, we do not have any mechanism whatsoever except going to court.
Is further discussion? Ready for the question. The question is, shall House Bill 489 be returned to second reading for the purpose of adopting a specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 20 Nays, 1 Excuse.
The motion to return the bill to second reading has failed. Representative Parr?
I have a brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. Please come back to order. House Bill 489 is before the House, third reading. Is there further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Well, just one final comment. That Section B does, I think, as I stated twice before, take local autonomy away from the people that should be making these kinds of decisions. I just don't think that as a policy-making body, we ought to be passing the buck, or I think we're failing our legitimate duties in passing this bill out with Section B. I think Representative Greening is right to a certain extent. I don't agree with him in his addressing my amendment. I think my amendment does solve the problem. Section B, as it's presently in the bill, certainly doesn't do any good for the school boards. I think their authority is going to be eroded, and we are going to have some serious problems if this bill does eventually become law. I would ask people and the floor, on the basis of these comments, to vote against the bill. I don't think it's a good bill.
It's further discussion. Ready for the question. Question is, shall House Bill 489 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 13 Nays, 2 Excused.
So House Bill 489 has passed the House on reconsideration. Is there further unfinished business to come before the House? Are there any special orders? Announcements, committee meetings. Representative Meekins? Under special orders, without objection, you have the floor, Representative Meekins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like the privilege of the floor to speak on a newspaper article in renewable resource development.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, reading the paper this morning, which was actually Tuesday's paper, I see a report that says Alaska has the heaviest tax burden of any of the 50 states. And I would just like to clear up the point that these are federal taxes, not state taxes. I think it's important because it might be misleading with the rhetoric that we've heard past few months about the tax burden that supposedly the state is imposing on certain corporations, that this is not what this report purports to show. In fact, what they've done is just take the total amount of taxes that states pay to the federal government and add those up cumulatively, and then by a formula tried to redistribute them back to the states, attribute them back to the states. So, and in that respect, we pay more taxes per capita than any other state, and I think that that's true, and that's a good point for us to remember when we're dealing with the federal government. That's partly because our wages are higher, and therefore we take a higher percentage, and partly because they're talking about federal taxes that corporations pay. I think it's important to make that distinction. The other subject I'd like to speak on briefly is our reliance on non-renewable income, revenue to the state. The administration is very concerned about this, as are a lot of us. I'm very concerned about it too. I think we have relied to a great degree. I think it's upwards of 60% of our revenue comes from non-renewable resources. That is, at some point, that revenue is going to be depleted. When the oil is gone, we won't have oil revenue to help defray the costs of government and provide services. So it's important that we try to do something about that. But there are really three ways that we can do that. We can decrease oil taxes, which I don't think we should do. We can increase personal taxes, which I don't think we should do. Or we can utilize the revenue that we receive from oil companies to try to move to a renewable resource-based economy, an economy that sustains itself year after year and that is not non-renewable. And I think, of course, that's the wisest measure and wisest way we should go. This morning, in testimony before the House Finance Committee, the Department of Revenue opposed a measure sponsored by Representative Freeman, which I'm a co-sponsor of. That measure is to provide a tax rebate of $100 the first year, $200 the second year, and $300 the third and every year after that to citizens of the state. It's an attempt to share the benefits of our oil wealth to the persons in the state that are paying taxes. They opposed it on the basis that it would increase our reliance on non-renewable revenue. The flip side of that, of course, is that any measure that would increase personal taxes would decrease our reliance on non-renewable revenue. So they evidently are thinking that the way we should move to less dependence upon non-renewable revenue is to increase personal taxes or at least keep the personal taxes high. And, of course, Representative Freeman and I are vigorously opposed to that. I think it doesn't make good sense. When you consider the opportunity that we have in this state to utilize this temporary surplus that we're going to have for maybe 15 years at the most. By 1992, our revenue projections show that we won't have surpluses anymore, that in fact we may indeed have deficits unless we utilize this revenue to start renewable resources in this state. And I think it's important that we do that. And we're moving towards that right now with the permanent fund and with the Renewable Resource Development Fund that this legislature has passed and is currently working on. I think that's the method we have to go. We can use that revenue as if it were the battery to start the engine of renewable resource economy in this state, and I think it's important that we do. In addition, there's another concept involved. The resource in this state are jointly owned by all the people. The state doesn't own it. This legislative body doesn't own it. The oil companies don't own those resources. The people do. And when those resources are developed, I think it's important that they share directly in the benefits of those resources development. Now, we've tried in the past several ways to do this. We've tried revenue sharing, increasing the amount of money that we give to the municipalities. That doesn't seem to work, Mr. Speaker. Although they do provide more services, they don't decrease municipal taxes. We've seen that. We've tried more government services. And in some cases, this works, but in a lot of cases, people don't really feel any difference. And I think it's clear, and it's a firm principle of economics, that if you're trying to give somebody more money, that you ought to let him or her decide how to spend it, because they know best what's good for them, and that's the attempt that we're trying to do in this bill, where we provide to those people who pay taxes an income tax rebate of $100 the first year and increasing to $300 for every year after that. So I would hope that the administration would change their position, because it seems to me that their position is really running contrary to what would be a wise way to utilize our oil revenues to, one, stimulate renewable resource development so we get off the hook of non-renewable revenue, and secondly, distribute the benefits of what is commonly owned by the people of the state to the people of the state. Thank you.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, under special orders, I'd like to have the privilege of the floor to discuss decentralization.
Without objection, you have the floor, Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I've received a letter from a constituent in Fairbanks who has applied for a small business loan. It's been 3 months. Nothing's happened. So I started following up on this. It turns out, Mr. Speaker, that in order to serve the Rail Belt area, where about two-thirds of the people in the state are, Department of Commerce and Economic Development has one person who is supposed to take care of small business loans and fisheries loans and tourism loans. And apparently this gentleman is working himself to death trying to do this. He is supposed to cover all the Kenai Peninsula, the Anchorage area, and the Fairbanks area, besides places like Dillingham. Mr. Speaker, it doesn't make much sense. We Department of Commerce and Economic Development puts out brochures to advertise the fact that we have these loan programs. They raise expectations, which can't be met. Right now, Mr. Speaker, this year they've had 400 applications for these loans, and as of this same time last year, they'd had 250. Now, of the 400, they've only been able to process 200. There are time lag now before from the time you put in your application until you can get that money in your hand, if you go into a small business loan request, is running 5 to 6 months. Now, Mr. Speaker, the legislature, meaning the Finance Committee, as I guess, last year, the first place, let me put it this way, the governor didn't ask for anybody to take care of this two-thirds of the state's population last year. But the Finance Committee, in its wisdom, and I'd like to congratulate them for that, did put two slots in the budget for that purpose. Now, the governor, in his great wisdom, saving a few dollars at the expense of servicing the people, cut the two slots down to one. So there we are, you know. We're being, the administration is its usual tactic of being penny wise and pound foolish, of ignoring the greater body of the population, this state, on very reasonable expectations. Now, Mr. Speaker, I have great hopes that the Finance Committees are going to do something about that again this year, and perhaps since we have an even-numbered year, maybe those figures will stay in the budget.
Are there any more special orders? Representative Osi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to have the privilege of the floor to speak on the same subject. As I have received several telephone calls and also letters on the same thing, I did tell them I would bring it forth. I did speak to the chairman of the Commerce Committee this morning, hoping that he can shake him up there a little bit. On top of that the gentleman in Fairbanks today will be in Kenai, and he said he has more now than he can process. He has them stacked this high on his desk. Also, that they moved him out of the office, so he's out in the lobby now, and he has no one to take his telephone call, so he's not there while you get no response ever. So I certainly like to see some action taken to see that overcome this. Some of the people need this money now, and they're going to have to wait, according to his statement, 6 months before he'll be able to process their applications and get their money. I think this is terrible. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any more special orders? Representative Swanson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, on the same subject.
The floor.
I think that I've had a dozen different letters, all dealing with the same thing of in the problems that the people that's processing the loans are having. And I discover in my talking with people down in the third and fourth level that they have received a memo from the governor's office that they are not to talk to any member of the legislature concerning anything to do with their job unless it's cleared by the governor's office. Now, when the people that service the people in the state are put in a position like that, something must be done. I think that probably the people that are especially working in the loan program, I talked to them 2 months ago and 3 months ago, and they tell me that they're getting farther and farther and farther behind, and the pressure is more and more on them. And I said, well, what can I do? He said, well, give us some more help. And when I go back to talk to him, say, you got any more help? He said, no. Besides that, and I'm not specifically talking about anyone in economic development now, but I was handed a memo from the governor's office that instructed them not to talk to any more legislators concerning anything to do with the state.
Are there any more special orders? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Referring to Mr. Meekins' remarks earlier, I'm sure that he would have wanted also to, in addition to mentioning the need to stimulate renewable resource activity in our state for the future years, that we also need to stimulate new non-renewable resource activity. I think specifically of Interior Alaska and the opportunities we have in mining, particularly hard rock mining. So often when we talk about the percentages of revenue coming from non-renewable resources, and we point to the need to stimulate renewable activity, we forget the opportunities that still lay before us in non-renewable, particularly in the interior. Thank you.
Are there any more special orders? Announcements, committee meetings. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the House Select Committee on Telecommunications meets tonight at 7 o'clock to continue our discussions on House Bill 545, the Alaska Satellite Users Association, other such proposals, and particularly the report of the Governor's Office of Telecommunications on the TV demonstration project. Tonight we expect to have some of the public users and the educational people there. Also, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, House Labor and Management Committee will meet to begin our discussion on the various versions of House Bill 550. There was this morning introduced the long-awaited sponsor substitute of House Bill 550, which we will have before us tomorrow, and that will be the first of several committee days on that bill.
Representative Gardner.
The Judiciary Committee will meet at 3 o'clock today on House Bill 803, Challenges to Regulations of State Agencies, by Representative Cooper.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, I didn't say the subject matter on House Bill 550. It's relating to unemployment compensation.
Representative Bradley. Representative Urien.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, this evening the 4th District Republican Party is having a Mexican potluck dinner at the Eagle Crest Lodge, and you're all invited. That's from 6 to 9 p.m. this evening.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, Hess will meet at 3 this afternoon on House Bill 519, Persons with Developmental Handicaps.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, the House Special Committee on the Permanent Fund will meet right after the adjournment here to take up committee substitute for 682 and House Joint Resolution 31. If we're ready, those we'll try to report them out. Otherwise, we'll
where will that be?
House Judiciary.
And what are the subjects of those pieces of legislation?
Committee substitute for House Bill 682, dealing with the Renewable Resources Development Fund. And House Joint Resolution 31, allowing confirmation power of the agencies that are managing both the Permanent Fund and the Renewable Resources Development Fund.
Representative Osi.
Yes, because there's been some question as to the meeting of the Regulation Review Committee. We'll meet tomorrow night at 7:30 in room 610 in the courthouse on the civil penalties of oil spills.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Free Commerce Committee on House Bill 611 will meet at 11:30, assuming the Senate has adjourned, and that meeting will be in the House Finance Room. And the Free Commerce Committee on Senate Bill 118 will meet at 4 o'clock this afternoon in Senate Resources.
Further announcements? Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, House Finance Committee will meet this afternoon to consider to continue hearings on university budget. Tomorrow morning at 8:30, we will consider House Concurrent Resolution 109 dealing with road maintenance regulations and House Bill 596, Permanent Fund.
Further announcements? Further business to come before the House? Representative Miller?
Yeah, if not, Mr. Speaker, I have several announcements. First of all, the weekly Democratic luncheon will be in the Capitol Room. That's the Capitol Room today in the Baranoff Hotel. The luncheon speaker will be Representative Bob Bradley, who is a candidate for Lieutenant Governor. Those of us that remember Bob's previous address a year ago are anxiously awaiting his remarks this year. Mr. Speaker, yesterday I made an announcement relative to Easter recess, which I think was perhaps a day and several chairmen premature. It develops that there is a need for us to work a full week that week. So the Easter weekend, we will, of course, have Saturday and Sunday off, but we will return to session at the regular time on Monday morning. Also, Mr. Speaker, the members of you might circle your calendars for Wednesday the 22nd and adjust any travel plans around that so that you'll be here. It's been suggested by several members that that this legislature have a legislative picture, a class picture, as it were. In years past, a number of legislators have done that. And we'll schedule that for Wednesday the 22nd. That's a day that right now no one is excused from the call, and Wednesdays are usually the days where there's least travel impact. Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that Representative Osi be excused from the call of the House March 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. The member will be excused on the dates indicated.
Mr. Speaker, if there's no other announcements, I'll move and ask unanimous consent this body stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, House is adjourned.